I guess the most appropriate topic to talk about on the right after Pesach is the sugya of Chomesh Lof of Pesach. So we usually give some of the highlights just in terms of practical speaking in Shul on the 8th day of Yontif, but I thought we'd just elaborate a little bit just on the sugya, just a little bit in terms of the lumdas, a little bit of the background, and to what's happening in terms of this important sugya that's going to impact on us for the next couple of days or weeks. So the sugya begins almost where we left off the sugya of the Iyun Shirim during the course of Yontif. It starts with the machlekes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, but whereas we spent a lot of time during Yom Tov talking about the machlekes Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon about chametz lifnei Pesach, in terms of what the status of eating chametz in erev Pesach is, here the machlekes at Tanoim is about the eating of chametz after Pesach. So it's the same Tanoim. So comes Rabbi Yehuda and says that there are three different isurim of eating chametz, and all three are also in HaTorah. There's chametz on erev Pesach after Chatzos, that's Rabbi Yehuda's Shita. Then there's chametz on Pesach itself, which of course everybody subscribes to. And then there's a third isur of chametz min HaTorah, and that's any chametz that was in existence during the course of Pesach, is also min HaTorah, bi'achila, b'hanah, the olam vod. Rabbi Yehuda says that this isur is derived from a special pasuk, from chametz l'sochelu. This isur has nothing to do with anybody doing anything bad. This has nothing to do, quite frankly, with the chametz being owned by a Jew. According to Rabbi Yehuda, just the mere fact that chametz existed in the world in Pesach, that in and of itself creates an isur min HaTorah of chametz shavu lo b'Pesach. That's the view of Rabbi Yehuda. And Rabbi Shimon disagrees. Rabbi Shimon says there's no such law, no such isur. In fact, one would have thought that this is almost Rabbi Shimon l'shitaso. The same way that Rabbi Shimon disagrees with Rabbi Yehuda's chametz on erev Pesach in the afternoon, which we spend so much time about over Yom Tov, so Rabbi Shimon l'shitaso also disagrees with this. So it's not quite l'shitaso because they're actually Rishonim who split in the Pesach. When it comes to chametz shavu lo b'Pesach, nobody follows Rabbi Yehuda. The Gemara rejects Rabbi Yehuda. The Gemara sides with Rabbi Shimon and says that min HaTorah there is no such thing as chametz shavu lo b'Pesach. Chametz and erev Pesach after Chatzos is a big question. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, Rambam, Rav, a lot of discussion we spoke about it in the past. But in terms of Chametz of Pesach, the Gemara itself paskins explicitly that the halacha does not follow the view of Rabbi Yehuda. There is no Isser at all in the Torah of Chametz of Pesach. If there's no Isser at all in the Torah of Chametz of Pesach, so why in the world does the Mishnah say it's a problem? The Mishnah in Pesachim and Afgav Ches says that a chametz of a Jew that existed in the world during Pesach is a problem. You're not allowed to eat it, you're not allowed to derive benefit from it. So the Gemara concludes, no, that's not an issur d'oraisa. That's not a reader of Shimon Torah. That's nothing to do with this machlokes. In our Torah, there's no such issur. But there's a new issur called the Nisa d'Rabbanan, called the Knas, a penalty, that Chazal instituted, nothing to do with Yisum d'oraisa. The Chazal instituted a penalty because the person violated by Rav Matzah, therefore we're going to make a knas and we're going to penalize you that you cannot eat, you cannot derive benefit from that chametz. So that's how we pass in halacha. That chametz shavu lo b'Pesach is not an issur d'oraisa. It's only an issur d'rabbanan. The reason for the issur d'rabbanan is because of a knas, because of a penalty, and the penalty is reserved for those who violated by Rav Matzah, namely a Jew. That's why the Mishnah says explicitly that chametz shavu lo b'Pesach is mutter. If you would have held like Rabbi Yehuda, that chametz shavu lo b'Pesach would have been an issur d'oraisa, then there wouldn't have been any difference between Jewish shalom chametz and goyish shalom chametz. All chametz would have been a problem. So the pizzas that were owned by Mr. Brown would have been a problem, and the donuts, that's why no donuts this morning, just in case Rabbi Yehuda's right. That's not why, just because nobody bothered getting the donuts. What? They're coming. Okay, good. Okay. But according to the view of Rabbi Shimon, we pass in halacha, that chametz shavu lo b'Pesach is only osim d'rabbanan. The reason for the osim d'rabbanan is because of the kenas, and the kenas only makes sense when it was a violation by this chametz was owned by a Jew. Now this idea of somebody doing something wrong and therefore we make a kenas and we penalize the outcome, this is not unique to chametz shavu lo b'Pesach. This is something that we find in many, many areas of halacha. Since we are in theory giving Hilchos Shabbos here this morning, so we'll make reference to Hilchos Shabbos. We have the same type of machlokes. Let's say a person did something wrong. A person went ahead and did a malach on Shabbos. So the Mishnah tells us that if you did a malach on Shabbos, under many circumstances, you're not allowed to benefit from that malacha. So you have almost the same type of a machlokes. Is that a nisa d'oraisa? Is that a nisa d'rabbanan? So there's one opinion in the Gemara that says that's a Torah prohibition. Any malacha that was done on Shabbos by a Jew, you cannot derive benefit from it at all. And we don't pass that. We pass in that, no, that in a Torah, you're allowed to be the ever derived benefit from. Let's say a person cooked on Shabbos. We pass in that even if a person cooked intentionally on Shabbos, they did a terrible malach, the imam cooked from scratch on Shabbos, b'mezid. We pass in that be the ever minatorah, you're allowed to eat it. There's no issa minatorah to derive benefit to eat that food. we paskin that mid the rabbanon, you're not allowed to eat it because of a knas. Because Chazal made a penalty because you violated Chilul Shabbos. Therefore, we're not going to let you go ahead and eat your. We're not going to let. Just don't put anything in the kitchen, okay? The kitchen stove is still Pesach stuff in it, okay? All right. No, yeah, the kitchen is all Pesach things. So. Okay, no problem. Okay. So, outside is good, yeah. And here, and whatever you want, table in the back, but the outside thing's fine. Okay, so. Right. So we pass, it's only a knas with Rabbanan, therefore the knas doesn't apply in all circumstances, etc. Right. Very good. Excellent, right. So, again, so we find this idea of knasos with Rabbanan. It's a lemashal. We mentioned a little bit of reference to this yesterday. We mentioned that a person has a firstborn animal that has kedusha to it, so you're not allowed to make a move in it. You're not allowed to cause it to have a blemish. You're not allowed to cut its ear or something to make it to become permissible. So whether a person went ahead and he did it, he went ahead and he violated the isser of matam mum bekachim, so that even b'diavad, he's not allowed to use that animal. So there's a machlokes what the source of that is. So some say that's only an isser midrabbanan also because of the knas. Some say it's an isser deraisa. But others say that it's only the simple reading of the Gemara Bukhari says it's only a knas midrabbanan because you did something wrong. Therefore, we're not going to let you derive benefit from what you did. So that idea of making a knas on something because you did something wrong, therefore b'diavad would penalize you. So again, that's something that we find in many areas. And one of the areas that we find it is in the area of Chavish of Pesach. So the nature of the Yisr is a Knas. But once we talk about this as being a Knas, then we have to fine tune a little bit. When does the Knas apply? When does the Knas not apply? So here, one could suggest as follows. When it comes to Knasos, when it comes to penalties, so maybe one should argue that a penalty only makes sense for the person who violated the Yisr. Why should I be mean to somebody else? I didn't do anything wrong. Because he did an Aveira, why should I suffer? So there's one opinion in Rishonim that says that. Very, very startling view in Rishonim. There's a Sefer in Maseches Pesachim written by one of the Rishonim called the Sefer HaMichdom. Sefer HaMichdom was a I don't want to say obscure Rishon, it's not an appropriate way of saying it, but it wasn't, you know, regular, you know, standard that we have another Maseches. There's a Rishon that we have on Maseches Pesachim. And the Sefer HaMichdom, he quotes such a possibility. He quotes such an opinion that the prohibition of Chavish Lo Pesach applies to the Oiver, applies to the person who violated it, but to somebody else is okay. That would be a Gaval Kakula. If we would have followed that Sefer HaMichdom, that would have made life, I don't have to bother making announcements, what Chametz is us, what Chametz is everything, but as long as I didn't violate my right, say, it's not my problem, I can eat somebody else's Chametz. So nobody passed like this. It's not mentioned, no other Rishon under the sun quotes this, it's not mentioned, Halacha and Shulchan Aruch as the Yesh, nothing zero. It's been completely rejected in Halacha. So we assume that the Knas of Chavish Lomar Pesach applies to everybody, whether I violated, you violated, anybody, as long as it was a Jew who violated it, that's a problem. Under what circumstances did the person violate by Rabbi Matzah? So we know, so going back to the model of Hilchos Shabbos, that the knas of not benefiting from the halacha that was done on Shabbos depends to a certain degree whether it was done intentionally or was done unintentionally. This becomes a very, very complicated details of Shilas. If a person did a malacha on Shabbos, b'mezin, intentionally, knowing full well that it's Shabbos, that's a much more serious problem. If a person did it b'shogeg, that's a big, big machlokes. Is there any knas altogether? Is there any penalty altogether? So we're machmir, to some degree there is a knas, but not completely. It's a little bit of a complicated sugya. But everybody agrees that there is potentially a nuance of difference whether the person did it intentionally, they really, really deserve a penalty, or whether we say, no, that it wasn't their fault, they didn't know about it, they didn't really know, etc. Somebody asked me, Shaila, just recently, that they're in school, and they... they were working together in a project with a whole group of other students in a non-Jewish institution, and some of the other students who were involved in the project are Jewish, and the people told them that, oh, they're going to be doing some work over the next couple of days, including Shabbos and Yom Tov, on this project. And now they're going to come to school tomorrow, and they're going to want to benefit from all the work that was done on Shabbos. They know for a fact it was done on Shabbos. They know for a fact it was done on Yom Tov. Are they allowed to benefit from the other people's work? So they were asking me, Alam d'Shashayla, in terms of, is that called Nenem Imlech B'Shabbos? So it depends. For you, it's for somebody else. It's amazing, it's Shuggy. So I said, no, not the person's a Shuggy. Everyone's a Shuggy. They have no idea that Shabbos, they don't know Yom Tov, they don't know anything. So the person responds to me, what do you mean? They know it's a Jewish holiday. It's a Jewish holiday. Knowing it's a Jewish holiday is not equivalent in halacha. That's amazing. Rambam writes in Hilchos Mamrim that if a person grew up not from, they have no exposure to Yiddishkeit, even though they happen to have seen the Jewish community in action, that still doesn't mean that they're, that doesn't make them into a mezid right away. Mezid means they know exactly what they're doing. So that would be significantly less of a problem when somebody does a malacha and shog rather than a mezid. So what would the din be about Chomesh Lov HaPesach? Should we argue that when it comes to Chomesh Lov HaPesach, the same should be true? That maybe the knas, maybe the penalty only makes sense for somebody who violated the prohibition, the mezid, but if they violated the shogeg, if they only did it unintentionally, so what's the big deal? It wasn't their fault. They didn't mean it. They didn't mean to do anything bad. Maybe we shouldn't make the kenas of them. If that would be true, that would be phenomenal. I said, what are these guys, the Mr. Pliny and the Mr. CNS and the Mr. Yenim, all the different stories. They don't know from nothing goodish. Because the rabbi told them that they should sell their chametz and pears. They don't know what they're talking about. So if that would be true, that the kenas was only made when people were amazed, that would make life so much easier for us. So unfortunately, we don't pass like that either. It's also not even mentioned. Shulchan Aruch, we pass it unequivocally. That if a person violated by Rav Emotze, whether they violated it b'mezid, whether they violated b'shegeg, the knas was made across the board. Made b'shegeg, made b'mezid. But maybe one could argue that b'mezid b'mezid, when does it make sense that a person, we can say that a person is a shegeg, that's if the person at least knew that they're owning chametz. They don't know that it's Pesach, and they don't know that you're not allowed on chametz on Pesach. They don't know all the details from a religious vantage point, but at least they know that they have chametz. What would it then be if a person has chametz in the rishus? They don't even know that they have chametz in the rishus. So would that also be included in the kenas? Why would one think that that's less? So maybe one could argue that falls into the category, also a very important Chashavah's term, that falls into the category of what's called the misasek. So misasek means, let's say for example, I'm walking into a room, and my elbow bangs against the light switch, and nabuch, the light goes on. So that's not amazing for Shrona. That's not even a shogeg. If I would live in the times of the Beis Hamikdash, I wouldn't even have to bring a korban chatas to be mechaper for that. Why? Anything that I do without any cognizance of what I'm doing is a garnish. It's not dvar b'talem. That's what the Gemara calls misasek. When a person does something and they don't even know it's flying, they're not even aware of what they're doing. So that's not considered to be anything. That's zero. That's meaningless. So if a person knows that they own chametz, but they just don't know that it's Pesach, or they know that they own chametz, and they just don't know that not Jews not allowed on chametz and Pesach, so that I understand. That I got. That's a shogeg. So that I can, half understand this is a knas. But if a guy didn't even know what's going on, he had no clue that it's chametz and Pesach, and you can tell me that that's called by rote, like we spoke a little bit in one of the shirim of Yom Tov, but the person who was dying, the guy was just laying in a coma, and he has chametz. He doesn't know that he has chametz. There's no clue that he has chametz. That's chametz lo v'pesach. The guy's not even aware that he has anything. So the pashas and the halach and the shulchan aruch, that's also included in the kenas. This kenas is very, very tough. This kenas has no limits, no bounds to it, that we're making kenas of things right and left. Whether the person knows, the person doesn't know, baby shegi, baby me, sounds like vidaner on Yom Kippur, baby shegi, baby onis, baby rats, no matter what, everything is included, even though the person has absolutely no clue, no kaizitz whatsoever. So it's this last part of the halacha that raised the red flag in the world of lamdus and the acharonim. Why should this be so? Why should there be such a halacha that chavish or pesach should apply even to a person who hasn't ever a clue as to what's going on? What happened to the principle of misasek? Isn't misasek potter? Misasek is a nothing. So the Nesivis, one of the Gedolei Acharonim, posed this question. And the Nesivis says, the reason why misasek isn't going to help here is because of the nature of the Isra by Rav Emotze. By Rav Emotze is an Araveiris that one violates but doing nothing. Chilul Shabbos requires a Maisa. Other Araveiris require a Maisa. By Rav Emotze, as we spoke a little bit about in the Shas today, is something that you usually violate without a Maisa. I'm sitting back, twiddling my thumbs, didn't sell my chametz, didn't get rid of my chametz, didn't do anything. Oh, we slap you now, we call you, you're in violation of Rav Emotze. It says in the Sivis Alumdus that misasik means that a maisa that's done totally out of whack with what's going on, that's not called the maisa, that's not called your maisa, it's as if it happened by itself. But when it comes to Rav Emotze, which is not an isa yedei maisa anyway, it's a nisr a yedei a matzav, I'm in a situation of owning chametz, b'shev el tasa, the mice, I own chametz. At the end of the day, I own chametz. Whether I know about it, I don't know about it, whether I'm aware of it, I'm not aware of it, kagre. At the end of the day, we can't speak about a mice. So since we're not dealing with the hilchos mice, therefore the whole halacha is a misasik breakdown. That's the famous word from the Nesivis. And Rabbi Kibega disagreed with that Nesivis. Rabbi Kibega says no. He says the kasha was not a kasha in the first place. Rabbi Kibega said that you can't ask a kasha, hey, why should I get a kenas? After all, it's misasek. So Rabbi Kivega said misasek means that there's a ptur from a korban. You don't have to bring a korban for what you did. If it would have been a nisr bekares, but it's still called the ma'is aveira. It's still called an act of something wrong. I did an aveira. At the end of the day, I did an aveira. I'm not responsible for it in the base of mikdash. It's not in the base of mikdash or a kayim. I wouldn't be responsible for it. But in terms of an aveira, it is an aveira. It's considered to be an aveira. And since I did an aveira, push comes to shove. I did an aveira. I did something wrong. Since I did something wrong with Mela, I have to suffer the consequences, whether it's my fault, not my fault. Basic, sure, it doesn't matter. At the end of the day, I did something wrong, and I did something wrong. Therefore, the consequences of Chomesh Pesach apply. So when all the dust settles, Chomesh Pesach applies. It applies across the board. It's such a chometic akras. It applies to my chametz, to Yanim's chametz. It applies b'meiz. It applies b'shege. It applies misasek. You name it, it applies. Why does it apply? Because the person violated by Rava Imatzei. Now comes the Shulchan Aruch and throws another curveball at it. Comes the Shulchan Aruch and says, what if I have chametz in my rishus on Pesach that I didn't violate by Rava Imatzei? Why didn't I violate it? I've mevatel it already. We spent a lot of time talking about this over Yom Tov. With the rice of bitul b'yamasagi min haTorah. As long as I say kol chamira, I said according to most Rishonim, I don't even have to say it. I can just think it. I think the chametz is bottom hefki after the hour. So min haTorah, I'm good to go. If I would ask my Shabbeinu, do I have to check the chametz? What are you checking the chametz for? You mevatel the chametz. The whole institution of looking on your hands and knees and crawling under the beds and looking oral abos the baker is a chametz liur neher was instituted mid the rabbanon. According to most Rishonim, because of Min HaTorah, all you did was bitul. You just had a tefka kafli yara, but it's still there. So you left your pizzas in your freezer, you left your schnapps in your cafeteria. It's all sitting in front of you, so you may come to eat it. So therefore, mid the rabbanon, you have to go the extra mile and actually physically get rid of it and destroy it. But mid the rice, as long as you bottle kafli yara, you're good to go. So I would have thought that, let's say a person did bitul chametz, just didn't bother doing bidikas chametz. So he didn't violate by Rav Matzah. So maybe his chametz should be okay. So guess what? That's also no good. That since mid the Rabbanon you didn't do bidikas chametz, so we treat you almost like you violated by Rav Matzah in a sense. That means we throw the kenas at you also. So therefore, the halacha, whether the person did bitul, didn't do bitul, did it, well, it doesn't matter. No matter what happened, the bottom line is that chametz on Pesach is going to become problematic. So one has to be careful, not just obviously about their own chametz, about somebody else's chametz. If it's chametz of a Pesach, we have a very, very serious problem. Now the question becomes, how do we take all of that we just spoke about, all the lumdus that we speak about, and now try to, you know, to have it play out for us in the world of Metzias, in the world of practical halacha?
Is that why, you know, they say when you found chametz in your house or something during Pesach, did you destroy it? So apparently, like you're saying, according to the Rabbanan, it's the...
Right, that's right, right, right. Min haTorah, you wouldn't have to do anything. Min haTorah, if you found chametz in Pesach, leave it there. It's not yours, right, but mid Rabban, very good, right, you're right. If you did bitul, so min haTorah, you don't have to get rid of mid Rabban, you still have to, correct. That's part of the Tekarim Tikus chametz, very good, right. So, how does all this play out in terms of Maaseh? So, not all that long ago, it wasn't that hard how to figure out how this all plays out. Maaseh, namely, everybody knew who was Jewish, who was non-Jewish. A little store, so either Yankel owned the store or John owned the store. You figured out if it was Jewish chametz, it was Goyish chametz. Everything was simple. But now life has become much, much more difficult. We have big stores, and people become meshubah that they have to go shopping in all these different big supermarkets. And it's not always so easy to tell whether these supermarkets are owned by Jews or owned by Goyim, who owns what, where, when. So let's try to see, map out some of the challenges that we have in terms of navigating the sugya l'maisa in terms of Chomesh Chametz Pesach. So one of the big, big challenges was a major issue that was raised already to Rabbi Moshe Feinstein was the following. Sometimes you have a situation where there's a store, it could be a big supermarket, a little makom, whatever the case is. It's a store in town, and the store is owned by a Jew. We know, simple, we know for a fact that the store is owned by a Jew. Not too complicated, but the problem is the Jew is not from... And the Jew is not particularly interested in closing the store. He's not particularly interested in closing up his chametz. He's going to continue selling chametz during the course of the week. But this poses, of course, a big challenge for us. So let's say we want to be able to patronize that store after Pesach. It's the only store in town. What are we going to do? So a suggestion was made. Let's go to the store owner and say to him, why don't you sell your chametz to a guy? We'll do Mechiras Chametz for you. We'll write up a document for you, the same as we write for everybody else. You authorize me to sell the Chametz. So the store owner says, great, that's wonderful. But I'm just telling you, I'm still keeping my store open on Pesach. And where's the profit going? I'm going to take the profit. So he's willing to sign off. I hereby sell all my Chametz to Mr. Brown. It's completely, totally his. But the only problem is that all the bread and all the cake, all the cooking, everything that's sitting in the store is still being sold, and Mr. Brown is not getting the profit. So what's going on? How do we understand that phenomenon? So Ramesh had a big chiddush. Ramesh said, what just happened is as follows. There was a mechira. The mechira's chametz was binding, was valid, and therefore Mr. Brown, the non-Jew, is the owner of that chametz. I, Mr. Cohn, who owns the store, is still selling chametz. So you know what we call Mr. Cohn? He's not in violation of Bar Rav Motzi. That's not his problem. You know what he is? He's a gazlan. He's stealing from Mr. Brown. He says, Achotzbah. He sold his chametz, and then he's making money off the chametz. It doesn't belong to him anymore. He's a gazlan. So Ramesh said, okay, so the fact that he's a gazlan, that's not my problem. So he's a gazlan. How does that impact me? Not at all. I can then go ahead and patronize that store. I can eat the chametz after Pesach, because that chametz is chametz shalakom. It's chametz that belongs to a guy, and that chametz is okay. Even though the store is open for business and selling chametz, that doesn't impact on the bechir whatsoever. The only thing is, Ramesh threw a monkey wrench, as Ramesh says, that's regarding the chametz that was in the store before Pesach. But let's say Mr. Cohen gets new shipments, so the new shipments of chametz come in, so that's a joke. You can't sell what you don't own. So any new chametz that's coming in is being delivered to Mr. Cohen's store. It doesn't belong to Mr. Brown, it belongs to Mr. Cohen. So that chametz is going to be also bana. So now you're going to have a tricky situation. I'm going to walk in, let's say Rabbi Shalosky is going to walk into the store on Motzai Pesach, and he's going to try to buy a box of cereal, and he has to try to make a chetmet. Where's cereal? What cereal? Where does the cereal come from? Is this cereal the cereal that was there from Erev Pesach that was sold to Mr. Brown with this half-baked mechira? Or is this cereal some of the new cereal that came in? So that becomes very, very complicated. So we start to look at rules of Rov. Maybe Rov of the box is off from before. Maybe the Rov of the box is off from before. That gets very, very, very tricky. So Ramesh says, I don't have a solution for that chametz. The chametz that's coming in on Pesach, I can't tell you, but I can tell you, says Ramesh, that the chametz that was there from before Pesach would be okay. If you're dealing with a fairly small kind of a store, so it could be that the turnover is not so great. It could be that most of the chametz that's sitting in the store is actually included in the sale. That was Ramesh's chiddush. So the question is, who am I being a lifnei before? So I'm causing him to be a gazlan. On the other hand, I'm also saving him from my rabbi matzah. So it's a little bit of both. So I don't want to comment which is the worst or better aveira, but it's a trade-off. But from our vantage point, it's better. So Ramesh held that the ikra din the mechira is good, and he even recommended to do such mechiras. Ramesh said that if you're not in an optimal situation, but if you're in a community where this is the only option available, so Ramesh says you should do these mechiras to help these people not to violate Bavir Matzeh, to help the Frum Oilam not to violate Chamash Shabbat Pesach, and it's exalish gefelach. So the Rav was very opposed to these mechiras. The Rav felt that a mechira that's done in such a way where business as usual, the store's open, what kind of joke is that? What kind of mechira is that? So that's megala that ein lecha bitl mechira gedol mezok. He says that shows that's not a mechira. You know, we are so hard when we do mechiras chametz. We try to make it as realistic as possible. We get the lawyers to read the contracts and we go over and we sit for an hour and a half in our pace in the morning with Mr. Brown and going through every single prop. We want to make it as legally binding as possible. And then you go ahead and pull off a joke like this. I sell the chametz and then wink, wink, and then I'm still open for business, selling the chametz. So the Rav thought that was such a bittul of the mechira, such an indication that the whole mechira is mamash sham, that invalidates the entire mechira. If it invalidates the entire mechira, then you gain nothing and you still have a problem of chametz over Pesach. So that was the running machlokes ready for 50 years between Rav Moshe and the Rav about these kinds of funny mechiras. So these mechiras that they were arguing about 50 years ago about little small stores, this became an issue with some of the main, some of the big stores. Used to be some of the stores in town here and other places, because some of the large supermarkets, believe it or not, were actually owned by Jews. And the owners of the supermarket themselves were actually Jewish, and they were willing to cooperate to undergo these mechiras, but then they were still getting food at the same time. They were still selling at the same time, and they were getting new shipments as well. So you ran into Quentin and Rove, the whole thing was a farce. And even according to Ramesha, it would only work, assuming that you have Rove, at least, of the chametz was still sold from beforehand. So these mechiras were a little bit shaky. Again, these were going on for many, many years. But then you had other kinds of institutions, other kinds of stores that were not owned by Jews. Who were they owned by? So they weren't owned by Goyim either. They were owned by corporations. Now, corporations becomes a whole complicated story in halacha, because anything that's owned by a public kind of an owning, so then let's say you have 10 million stockholders have a share in this particular store, inevitably some of them are Jewish. So is that called Chomet Shal Yisrael? Is that called Chomet Shal Akum? So the overwhelming majority of the poskim work with the assumption that unless you have either a Rov Yisrael, you have 51% of it is owned by Jews, or you have Jews who have a real serious share that they can really make some real decisions going on, that's not called a Chometz Shel Yisrael. Otherwise, we all have a little bit of share in these things. Anyone who has any money in any kind of thing, you have any money in any mutual fund, anything, you sit and read through every, I don't know if you do, I don't read every single little listing where every single penny of yours is invested in. So it could be you have some money invested in some Chometz company somewhere. So we assume that, Devarim B'Tehillim, that when they have a meeting as to what they should do about the product, they don't call Rabbi Sobolovsky. I mean, they always get these things in the mail about, you know, about taking votes about some thing, but I don't think anyone actually reads those. I don't think anyone actually does those things. Does anyone do those? Yeah, that's your job, what I'm saying. But on a personal level, the amount of share that you have in store Plony is so negligible that you're probably not going to have much of a serious vote. Am I correct? Unless maybe you're different, but on a personal level. Okay. So therefore, one could argue that if it's chametz that's owned on the stock market by 10 million different people, so that's not considered to be a chametz shel Yisrael, and that wouldn't pose a problem. So many of the stores that we deal with fall into that other category. By most of the stores that we deal with fall into that second category, that they're goyish-owned stores, halachically, even though they have a little bit of Jewish ownership, but they're halachically negligible, and therefore we could treat that as chametz shel akum. So this is the way the situation was going on for many, many years. You know, there were different opinions. There was a running machlokes. Some followed with Moshe's psak to be mounted the supermarkets that were sold with the chametz with the star on Pesach. Others followed Rabbi Soloveitchik's guidelines that we shouldn't rely on that. And the basic approach always was let's go for the goyish stores. We'll go for the goyish big stores, either ones that are owned by goyim legamrei. We'll go for the ones that are owned by corporations and shalom Yisrael. That's the way life was going for many, many years, until somebody came to this realization, I don't know, about 25, 30 years exactly when, that there's a thing called distributors. That distributor means Kishmokenu, that the chametz that's sitting in the store right now went through different hands along the way. It didn't come straight from the farm to right into the store. It was owned by somebody along the way. So the initial reaction was, okay, big deals with distributors. Ah, come on, what are the odds that the distributor is Jewish? I mean, come on, most people know in America are goyim. What would the possible odds be? One in a million chance that any distributor is actually Jewish? Until a little bit more research was done, and they realized that the number one distributor in the entire country is a company called CNS, which is Jewish, which is completely and totally Jewish. It was started by two Jewish partners, and one of them, I forgot whether the C bought out the S, S bought out C, one of them bought out the other, and now it is a completely, to the best of my knowledge, completely and totally Jewish company. And the question is, any chametz that passed, no pun intended, passed over through CNS over the course of a Pesach could potentially be a problem. So how do you deal with that? So one of the ways to deal with that is, well, let's pour a Moshe out. Pour a Moshe out again. And we'll say that, well, let's do a mechira for CNS. So let CNS sell their chametz. And again, it starts to get tricky because although there may be some chametz that's passing through CNS that wasn't included in the mechira, it's probably bottled Barov. So we'll make CNS and Erev Pesach sell off all their chametz, even though they're continuing getting chametz. Chametz is being delivered to them on Pesach. They're shipping off to other stores on Pesach. But since the overwhelming majority of that chametz that you're going to see that went through CNS probably was included in a mechira, so according to Rav Moshe, that mechira would be good. According to the Rav, that mechira probably would not be good, because according to the Rav, any mechira that's still business as usual, it's hard to call that a mechira. So that's why although the many, many poskim relied on the CNS mechira, but here for a few things. First of all, we never really know for sure, why walk at the store Plony, we never really know for sure what store, what actually was in CNS at any given time. So there are a lot of spakers that are throwing around. And number two, we have the suffix that maybe the mechir for CNS was good. So between those two, many, many poskim were willing to make and just look the other way when it came to CNS.
Is that only the case that if the owner, let's say CNS sold it to a third party who's not involved in the business, but let's say...
Oh, you mean if CNS switches with... Okay. So at this point, I'm going to have to turn off the recorders because I don't want anyone to call me.